of evasive when you're asking the question on the child, infant.
No, he wasn't. It wasn't that he was evasive. It was that I had to look him. Hey, what's up, Boris? Yeah, I had to look him in the eye to actually confirm he knew what I was talking about, because he had to make sure that I knew what I was talking about. He was like, wait a minute, what'd you say? Kind of thing. And I said, well, you understand that the person is the infant, correct? Because I patted him on the shoulder and said, right? Isn't that right? I said, yes, you understand that. I said, do you understand that, right? You understand that the decedent is the person, right? I looked at him and he's like, yeah, that's right. That's all right. And as a matter of fact, I was going to grab him and see if he wanted to jump on, but that's kind of intrepid, like just to grab him and throw him out with three dudes start asking. I was going to do Boris yesterday, but I saw him this morning and I was going to try and do another walk with him, but he hasn't come around yet. So, but about the infant decedent and everything else, I started to bring up reversionary interest, but he didn't understand that. Again, he's not at that level. I would think that reversionary interest would be more of an attorney general type of level and stuff for people. Like I brought up the whole thing about what Boris is like, that whole illusion thing about protecting it. If you understand it, you have a duty to protect it. It's not for you to destroy.
Yeah.
I kind of rephrased that in my own way to him. And he said, that's right. It's all about a growth thing that we all kind of get through and understand what we're doing here. It's not for everybody to get through. It's at an individual level. And he agreed with that. You know, again, like Mark was saying, oh yeah, if you keep on asking him stuff and agree, but it was different because like, I understand this dude. The 3 years I've seen him in a row talking about this. He's watched me deal with this foreclosure for 3 years. So he knows that he's looked at the Fishman stuff last year and the year before that, you know, all the stuff I was doing, this Patriot stuff. Like, he didn't really comment on that. But he did comment on what we were talking about when it came down to 12 USC 95A2, because I read that off to him.
He did, personally? He said that?
Yeah, I read it while I was at a stop sign with him, and read it to him. And I said, I wanted your opinion on. We were talking about like the infant decedent estates, the person, this, that, everything else. So getting down to the nitty gritty, understanding that if everything's this title dispute, the state's holding title to that name, what does it ever have to do with me? And he says, yeah, that's correct. I mean, that's part of the illusion. That's what he said. Okay, so and then we got down to like, okay, understand that you have to protect the illusion. Okay, so get this is when it started really getting interesting is when I brought the 12 USC 95A2. How are you going to actually do anything but discharge and do anything else? Because there is a contract in place, considering that I made a pledge through actually the purchase of that birth certificate. Wouldn't that make me just the actual purchaser? I didn't bring purchaser stuff up, but I should have. I wanted to. I didn't go into the whole purchaser, protected purchaser, anything about that, because I just didn't think of it. But wouldn't that make me just to actually have the birth certificate as an extract, not be the legal title holder? And he said, that's correct. I said, well, then how can anything ever be brought against me? I said, wouldn't I have to make the claim against myself? And he's like kind of going over. He's like, yeah. I said, so it's constantly about me making the claim and pushing the claim against myself because I'm constantly testifying against myself. He said, yeah. And then he started telling me about how he got somebody off that with the intent thing, about understanding, okay, you always have this intent. I said, well, that's just about, once again, arguing about this infant decedent's estate, right? And so he's once again like, okay, this guy is not going to get this. So I said, well, looking at this thing, if it's all legal title, again, it's title dispute, then what does it have to do with me? Especially, and then I pulled up the 12 USC 95A2, if it's all banking law and everything's just a tax. And he said, okay. So, I mean, it's like monopoly money. There's no money. There's all this is title dispute. What is anything anyway? And I actually brought up the word usufruct, and I was like, I asked him if he understood that, and he's like, he just – if he did know about it, didn't want to talk about it. And, you know, that was like, okay, well, back to titles then. If the state's holding the title, the name, and actually the person, and they're the legal title holder, then what does any of this have to do with me? And if I come in under 12 USC 95A2, and I read it to him and said, okay, it's the discharge of person, you know, it has no legal, everything's discharged, you know, dot. And he said, okay, now looking at this, now who's responsible now? And he goes, that's basically it. If you have that, they're not going to do anything. They can't. Because that is correct. You're right about the bankruptcy. Yes, there is. And it's just tax. So he blurted that out at some point, just kind of like at me. And so when we sat down, we're talking a little bit, walking back, I got back on the whole thing of like the foreclosure that I'm going through. Cause we started talking, he actually started talking about buying property and stuff. And I said, you know, that you're just going to be buying title to stuff, right? I said, it's not really the property, or it's not like the possession you're getting. You're just buying marketable title. And he goes, oh yeah. He's like kind of back on the subject. And I said, well, you know, I'm just looking at this. I mean, he was talking about the neighborhood here. And I said, they probably have my house listed because it is papered it up for a trustee sale. And he said, well, what do you mean? I guess he didn't really know that they had done the trust. They actually put a trustee sale thing on the door. And I said, yeah, I mean, they're trying to do that right now. And I'm probably going to use 12 USC 95A to let them know that I've been absolved. And, you know, it's basically anything but discharge of this matter is, you know, it basically, I'm done with this whole area. I've already let the court clerk know this. And I've done it in another instance, in another court civil matter, and it's basically just all been wiped off. I haven't checked it lately, but nothing's happened. Nothing in the mail, nothing. It's already been a week and a half, and they got their default. So I brought up something that I thought was interesting because I wanted to ask him about the Elvick stuff and what Boris and, you know, Jade and all them were asking about. What he was, I just wanted to kind of ask him about that. And so at about 5 minutes, I was just kind of talking to him, and he goes, so what did I bring up? I said, okay, understanding that that if it's all, hey babe, if it's all like on a default right now, that they got their default, what would happen if I asked for the judgment order? And he looked at me and said, well, why would you want to do that? I said, well, I mean, if I asked for the judgment order, wouldn't that show who they're actually bringing the charges against, or who they're actually making the claims against, or what's really happening behind the scene? Wouldn't that actually show some of that? And he said, yeah. He said, better still, you could actually do a FOIA on it. I said, well, even more importantly, what happens if I asked for the investigatory report? Doesn't that show who the collateral assessment is? And he said, yes. I said, so you understand this? And he said, yeah. I said, so do the lawyers carry around 1099-A's? And he goes, and he didn't want to answer that or anything else or get in it, because right when he was walking off to the neighbor's house, to my neighbor's, because we're neighbors, you know, he looked at me. He goes, dude, just do a FOIA, okay? Do a FOIA in the case, and the whole thing will get wiped. I said, why? He said, okay, because the judge, when you do that, it's exactly what Elvick says. It's actually you're coming in and making a claim, so it's not abandoned anymore, okay? So they can't – so now the judge wants everything off his desk. So he's going to send all charges or all payment of this tax, because now it's not abandoned anymore, to the prosecutor or whoever's bringing the claim.
That's right, and now they would have to present. They would have to do the assessment or admit if there's no claim, and the assessment has to be given to you, so you can give it to the public defender, so they can issue a check to account for the insurance policy.
Right, and so this is the part that I didn't understand well enough to start asking about. But I, you know, I he's my neighbor. So was Saturday. I'd love to have him jump in on this conversation and just not let him know that, instead of talk to Boris for a bit. But I don't know if he's up for that or not. He might be, but I'll tell you this, man, he's opened up right now to what's going on, because I've already brought everything up except protected purchaser and reversionary interest, to the point where he'd understand and actually be able to comment on it. But I can tell you that he does understand 99A and all the abandonment of the estate. Actually, if you ask for a FOIA and everything else, that could clear everything right there, because they don't know what to do.
What's a FOIA?
Freedom of Information Act. There's something out, at least in California. It's called the Sunshine Law. I think it's before Obama. I think it's been around for a while.
We're getting ready to do that to every case we have open down here for all the guys in the groups. We're just going to hit it all off. And the second we don't get an answer, guess where we're sending it? To the postmaster. Because every one of their claims comes through the mail.
Sorry, are you seeing some light on the register mail?
No. We're going to send it certified. Now, here's the deal. Rob Ryder sent over something today that was very interesting about the duties of a postmaster, about the general post office and their postal inspectors. Mm-hmm. And once we do this and we ask, we went down there to ask for the investigator's report.
just looking at this though, if you're just looking at this right, where he's saying this, if you guys, if you just ask for the FOIA, I mean, they have to show. He said they're gonna have to.
Yeah.
Dude, I would like to bring him on. I'd love to try and get him to come on right now, but I don't want to grill him to the point where I feel like he's giving up plausible liability.
That's why I just want to talk to him one on one.
Yeah.
Talk to him one on one. Nice little sit down conversation. Just give him something I wrote and see what he says.
Well, I brought all the papers with me. I wanted to go over it, and I saw him.
We've been working on some stuff. This guy that's with what I was talking about with the reversionary interest and stuff. I think we're just like quickly sit down.
Oh, one second.
Okay.
Huh?
First off, this is Frank. It's my friend Boris. And
this is Frank.
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good.
It was an interesting conversation that Larry was listening to he was going over with us today. Or Mark. Uh-huh. The birth event doesn't register a child. It actually creates an infant, which the state then holds in a guardianship-like state, just in case the possibility is that he returns. And so it's basically a person under guardianship, which makes the state, would be a ward of the state, and then you come in and use it, or we come in and use it, and don't realize that our pledge creates a purchase situation, where we actually purchase the use of the estate with the understanding of knowing that everything we do flows back into the public trust called the United States of America with the uppercase name, that straw man or whatever the hell they want to call that thing, as our public interface. So in doing that under 12 USC 95A, we are future interest, our reversionary interest, you know, which is just futures, accounts, receivables, and payables, would then revert back to the state. The state would then acquit and discharge that name from further service, which is the equivalent of suing one's livery, and the reversionary interest paid back would be the payment to release the nobility associated with the title.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically where we're going with this.
Okay. And the question would be, if you have any questions, I see the way you're going and where you're aiming to accomplish.
Uh-huh.
He just grinned at me here. So.
Aiming to accomplish. I'm selecting my words. Okay. I don't want to discourage anybody, but it's what you're going to accomplish. Where do you believe that you, and I say you as a group, not you as an individual, okay, may encounter a situation, not a problem, that a solution can be found without compromising you as a group? Where do you see that something may get stuck?
Well, we're just wondering how we actually would make it to where it's acknowledged. So we would operate in public basically transparently.
Anonymous?
Well, we'd still use the name and all that other stuff. It would be more along the lines that any of the debt associated with the taxes and all this stuff would not come to us. And we basically, what we're also thinking is that Social Security account at that point would then revert to a closed account, where nobody would make claims in the public against it. But whenever we're out there using it, any debt that hit it would evaporate. And thus we would create a natural recycling effect of debt. So it hit us, evaporate, and then be able to fall back down on other areas, come back down, do its job, then evaporate when it hits us again.
Okay.
And thus give them a way to get this debt under control. Well, of course, that's not what the bank, that's not what the goal is.
The idea, the thought behind it,
mm-hmm,
I can see it working. I just want you as a group, not you as an individual, of course,
okay,
to establish a backup situation in the event that is not accepted or acknowledged or reasoned the way you want it to be read or understood.
The backup.
Yeah, meaning that if this doesn't go through
or the whole idea behind it is not accepted, was rejected, or debated, and so on, what element or strategy you have to come back and say, but, and then...
Well, we can always come in under Article 1, Section 10 of the U.S. Constitution, where the gold and silver and title have been removed, thus impairing the obligation of contract, and this would be the remedy for the breach.
Okay, there you go. So I'm playing devil's advocate, okay?
Okay, so
is that what you were looking for? I don't understand the question, but I understand that's where the breach occurs.
Exactly. So I'm being the judge.
Right.
So I'm telling you, if I do not accept your presentation, what do you have to back it up? So then, you just told me what you have.
Right.
That's what I'm looking for. So you guys are the right track. It's good. Because believe me, they're going to find any glitch in the system or your presentation to say, and so.
Look, here's 12 U.S.C. 95 regulations. This is basically.
Now I'm understanding what he's saying is you have to show where that applies.
I beg your pardon?
How you get standing to come in under that obligation, that nexus, right?
Exactly. Well, when you're going to make a presentation, of course, it's all based on your research and the law that you have found and everything.
Okay, so basically, it would start when you accept the pledge of the declaration, the last line. It seems to create a natural purchase of an estate because that's taking by way of pledge. And the government, the United States, has already taken the fruit of your time as evidenced by the Federal Reserve note and used it.
Correct. So it comes down that you don't owe anything because it's already owned by.
Correct. So they've already experienced the benefit, and now we just have to come and claim take our side of the purchase because they bought everything you're going to do. They purchased it with the 1863 Banking Act.
Exactly.
And so what we have to do is come in and get our estate that's right now being held in abandonment because it's just an infant. Nobody knows where he is. Nobody knows anything about him. And he hasn't returned yet. So Sesta K axes, the state holds it as guardianship, so they probate it in common form in the register just so they can be a conservator of it, and then they invest the assets with their businesses and everything else. But we come in with the estate, and now we just become – and there's an inherent reversion of – enemy of the state, so the assets of the infant don't get touched by the one using the estate. So we have to get rid of that reversionary interest back, which would be all the future interest in the estate of its accounts receivables and payables, rendering that back unto Caesar, and now he is the proprietor of that name, and all we do is just use the name to acquire the government shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then they use that, and that will be used to underwrite their commerce activities and also be used to govern those who choose not to govern themselves.
Do you mind if I just jump in there?
Okay.
Good evening, Frank. Thank you for joining.
No problem.
Appreciate this. Boris and myself, we hooked up about 4 or 5 years ago, and we looked at this thing internationally, and we found that the Labour Code of 1863 and the 1907 Hague or the Geneva Convention of 1863, because there's only 6 months between the two, they're foundation documents for all international humanitarian law. And what we found at Article 53 and 55 in the 1907 Hague clearly state that all property has been seized by the belligerent government and held in abeyance. Article 55 clearly states that everything is to be governed under the rules of usufruct,
the state as usufructory and administrator of that usufruct, which it licenses out underneath it.
Yeah, so we realized that it was an international thing. So it wasn't just United States. It was United Kingdom, the European so-called Federation, and every other continent on this piece of rock. And we realized that it's the one world government, or the so-called one world government, is probably going to be everybody waking up and realizing that if they govern themselves in a certain way, in other words, act with...
Excuse me, when you say everybody waking up, you're going to make this public?
No.
Okay.
I ain't making this public. Oh, hell no, man. I'm not taking the responsibility for that leadership, man.
Not my plans, not my mind.
I couldn't carry that burden.
And what I'm saying is, the ones that choose to go
off the statement, because it can be misinterpreted, so let me know.
With great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah,
that's right. So to govern yourself in accordance with certain principles and allow everybody, it's just literally respecting the whole, you know, because how can I knock somebody that likes money? You know, how can you,
The way I look at it is, you can't go through destroying that which caused your spiritual growth, because then you're denying the next one his.
Yeah, good point, man.
So you can't run through this like a bull in a china shop.
Exactly.
And they're going to protect that, because that's part of the way they protect the system, because according to their books, on their military government books, there's peaceful inhabitants gives rise to a correlating duty to ensure they're not peaceful one day and warlike the next. So they have to have this illusion.
And you said something key there. They're protecting themselves, the government. They're not protecting the people.
No, they're protecting the public apparatus. Because that's all they care about.
Whatever we once interpreted, that may be, that's what they're protecting.
Right. Public order and safety. That's what their goal is.
Exactly.
And as long as you can show we're in harmony to that, that's why we've come up with the whole surrender, assigning that interest, that reversionary interest to them. That way, anything we do, now we're going to be the energy inputters. Instead of living through someone else's dreams, and living up to what their goals and dreams and desires are, now we can put the energy in and effectually change the energy on the out, change the output of what's visible, what the effect of the government everybody feels. So instead of having a small cabal of people controlling it, now we can expand it to include the actual people involved in it, not just a small group of people who want to control and manipulate it.
The choice between banks.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I see where you guys are heading, and it's pretty clear. And I know you're backing everything up on the law and the research that you have made, and I don't know you guys, since it's the first time I'm talking to you, you all seem to be very intelligent and very wise. Just be careful with the choice of words.
Correct.
It's, you know, because the implication that can bring.
Right.
And I have been talking to Mark, and we go back and forth, and he makes a statement, and I said, watch that. And I say something, he said, but. And so we go back and forth, and that is great. So it just is very important, the selection of word and statement.
Well, I've eliminated the use of fraud and other words of negative connotation, because I know it's not fraud.
Exactly.
It can't be. It's not fraud, because it has to be a certain way in order to make sure it's protected. So it's deception. Exactly. It may be a deception, but it's a deception out of necessity, so it's not really fraud.
Exactly. And also, always you can back things up that there's no intention of, or never had the intention of, a misrepresentation or fraud.
Correct.
So you can... There's no. I always say there's no intention. The bottom line, you know, and I'll give you an example in criminal law. You shoot someone, you kill the person, you're still innocent. Or no, the person is dead. So you have to be very careful, always using the correct terms, and you're not misrepresenting yourself or taking advantage of anything. You're just going based on what you have and protection of own self, all of
right.
us.
Right. Well, you're coming with the intent of purpose. Antenna, purpose,
exactly.
and being. And as long
exactly.
as you keep with that and understand that being at peace means accepting the whole, and that there are going to be some of those guys out there that you just want to put your hand over their
you
neck and just wring them like Bart Simpson.
A judge, they called the attorneys. There was a big trial going on, and this is a joke in the lawyers community, and the judge said, can the sharks approach the bench? They're going to be after because it's we think of what we're saying, the possibility of the reply, and what the judge will do and what we have to do. We think 10 steps ahead of time, and that's what happens.
Right.
So that's what I want you guys to do. Think ahead, what if, and then, you know, so you can have an element on zero to fire back and say, but, and rebuttal whatever they're saying. The thing is, trap them.
Yeah.
Because then they were not what to do.
But under this, like on this 12 U.S.C. 95A, right here, just this obligation, right here, it says, and if you're relying on this, okay, yeah. Anyone who, any person who relies, look at the second sentence here. Mm-hmm. And all persons rely on this, let's see, no person shall be held liable in any court for, in respect to anything done or omitted in faith in connection with the administration of or in pursuance of and reliance on this section, any rule, regulation, instruction, or direction issued hereunder.
Correct. Right.
So that reads to me like that's like basically emergency banking law. If everything's just the tax, looking at this whole thing, okay, how can the person be held liable if you relied on that? And there is no argument. I'm not arguing. I'm not coming in as an adversary. I'm just going to rely on that.
And ask, how can a person be held liable?
Right.
That's it.
Right. Just ask questions.
Exactly.
Yeah. If that's the decree of the king, how can one be
that? Ask questions. And, you know, like we all know that in proper English, you don't answer a question with a question, but you always have a way of responding. Do not admit, acknowledge, but do not admit. And always fire back saying why, you know, and then your question would be, why is this being presented? Where's the law? Where's the argument? Where do we stand?
Yep.
Always ask questions back. Do not accept anything they say as a done deal.
Correct.
Right, because presumption always stands. Right?
Exactly.
Everything's just presumption, really, just walking in there. And so the only way to trump presumption is to ask.
To us. Right?
Yeah.
To us. That's about it.
Right.
So,
Boris, anything else?
No, man. I think that pretty much. With the exception of. So with that, there was one other thing that I wanted. I think you talked to you about the what is it, the investigator's report for the collateral assessment. All we have to do is FOIA that.
You can FOIA that. You have the right as an individual or a group or collective to request that. The only time that, and that will be in federal court, that they will not release the entire document, and if they do, they will black out things that will be incriminating, or, I mean, not use incriminating, but can put some doubt in the government's action. They were
sensitive information.
Exactly.
Okay.
Otherwise, you as a citizen or as an individual have the right to request anything that they present through the FOIA.
And then once they do that collateral assessment and they provide it, that would be the evidence they're relying on using the estate.
Exactly.
And that would be what? The actual binding agreement showing that they experienced beneficial use.
Exactly.
And then once
and
they experience
have to
beneficial
show.
Use, now they become beneficial owner of the resulting trust, right?
Exactly.
That's basically how it works.
Exactly.
Okay.
But if you don't have, if they say, this is what we found, blah, 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 for investigation, assessment, what have you, you say, fine, I want to see it.
Yep.
But you said that that's done at like a federal level. So, for example, I just relied on this statute right here, the 12 U.S.C. 95A.
If this goes to federal court, it can be district court, circuit court, federal court.
It could be anything.
So
everything's below that.
Exactly. Right. You go from, you have the district court, which is the lower court, then the circuit court, and then the higher court.
Right.
Okay, so, but you still have to write any court that you go to through request document presented in court or through a judge through FOIA.
Right.
Now, okay, there's another thing I want to, okay, now you bring that up. Now, if a judge gets a default order, another reason we can do this is because when the judge issues the order, he guarantees that the claim upon which the relief was granted is there. Is that basically right?
That is correct.
So by doing this, and if they can't show it, then it shows that the claim wasn't there. So now they have to go back and cure the defect.
Exactly. Okay. But that will give you time to find out the information that they have. They have to provide it to you guys.
Okay.
And then, you know, they have to present another argument.
Yeah, but
and
now...
It can take forever because if they present another argument, which whatever other information they may or may not find, you have the right to know why, where, and how.
Okay. Since we're coming at this under a purchase via a pledge, and since we're putting value into the purchase, we become protected purchaser, and according to the securities laws, that we would then gain our security interest minus adverse possession. Now, would their claim then be an adverse possession claim? they're coming in adversely. And since the infants is, I mean, the reason I'm asking is because if they're coming in adversely, and you've assigned all the interest under the United States, then the infant's estate would then be a United States vested interest, and they'd be an adverse claim against the infant's estate, which is automatically a breach of trust.
That is correct.
Okay.
That's heavy.
It is.
what do you think about this? What do you think about that right there? That's like understanding that. That's like sort of like when I was telling you yesterday, the whole idea of projecting this illusion thing and everything else. That is okay. That's that. I mean, I'm not saying anything about that, but that is that. That's the part that needs to be protected. Understanding.
Oh, yeah. Now here's the other thing, though. Since we are the protected purchaser, they're also a protected purchaser, provided everybody agrees to 12 U.S.C. 95A, Part 2, because they bought it, they took it, we bought, we took. Now, anybody comes in adverse possession, then someone, whoever didn't, because I view 12 U.S.C. as the insurance policy that would insure all that would indemnify all parties from any claim made against that name and the discharge of their duties of acquittance and discharge of the obligation. So the second someone doesn't do that, now they have to produce their own insurance that shows that they can indemnify.
Exactly.
Right, the only thing that's insured is that peace officer bond, right? So if they don't have that, they're constantly taking on their own liability.
They're liable.
Yeah. So the peace bond is basically that bid bond, performance bond, and payment bond, isn't it? That they do.
Yes, it is.
Because that way, because every claim they're coming in is basically a federal project under contractorship.
That is correct.
Okay.
Can I ask a question? Zippy put something in the window. How can this be resolved out of court? Can this be achieved?
Yeah, I believe you answered it with the ask for the investigator's report.
What's in the how can this be resolved in how
out
can this
court.
Be resolved? Oh, out of court in private, you say. Well, you were talking about private and public stuff, and you were saying yesterday, don't ever go really into court.
So if you can avoid the court system, you're ahead of the game.
Okay.
Now, you can do it in private, and it will be under mediation.
Okay.
So there can be lawyers or just citizens. It doesn't matter. And it can be where the parties involved, you know, for the best interest of all, you agree to mediate instead of going to court. It's your choice, and all parties have to agree.
Okay, so... For instance, if somebody wrote out a communication to the relevant party, which in this case could be the treasurer of the local county council, and one gets the opportunity to enter a venue and talk openly and amicably about pretty much what's going on, some kind of, what's the word I'm looking for, agreement would... then come about if one was given that opportunity to enter a venue outside the court?
If you have a mediation and there is an agreement, let's say that there's no agreement, but you had in good faith the intention of reaching an agreement and the other parties involved does not, then they acted in bad faith.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you still, you know, then of course you can mediate again and reschedule. And believe me, when they find themselves trapped in a situation that they can't find a way out, they will try to avoid court because it can backfire so bad.
Yeah.
So they will be shocked to see what you guys as a whole have to present and your argument and your basis and so on and so forth. They're not going to be prepared. So they're going to be taken by surprise. And, of course, the immediate reaction, the answer will be no. And then you say fine. So you acted in good faith. They acted in bad faith. So they're going to come back and we're like to meet again and continue the mediation. They're going to try to avoid court
as possible. Because once they act in bad faith, they can't come into the court with clean hands and thus get their equitable decision.
because the judge would say, well, it's my understanding that prior to this hearing, you know, there was a mediation schedule set, and what happened?
Yeah.
And then if the judge, and they're gonna try to be smart. They're gonna try to go around it, saying, Your Honor, they didn't present a valuable claim or a valid claim or what have you. Then you have to sit in to express yourself and say, we did. This is our argument. This is our documents, and they acted in bad faith. Judges, they don't like that. They don't like that. They like to think to settle. Judges, let me put it this way. They don't like to waste time. And I don't know if you've ever been in a court, in a hearing.
Yeah.
If you haven't, I would suggest just go for the fun of it, and you'll see how the judge say, give it straight to the point. Go straight to the point. Don't. Okay.
I've seen the one judge I've been in.
These people, they would just try to go, well, Your Honor, well, and the judge, they don't like that. It's just give me in a nutshell what it is, and that's it. And what is the solution, and how can we resolve it? That's what they want to hear. And if you guys present that and you show that the mediation was there and the other party or parties act in bad faith, believe me, they would be in deep shit.
Bad faith is being like, when I look at this thing, I always see immediately good faith. Good faith is like everything.
Everything. Good faith, you have the intention of solving something. Right. You have the good faith, the good intention.
Right.
Bad faith, they don't want to do it.
Right.
Because they want what it comes attached to it.
Right.
Money.
Well, yeah, because the judge is liable as soon as he hits as soon as that order is issued, the judge is liable.
You guys have seen the grin on his face when he said that.
Money.
Yeah.
So that's the whole thing, because I have done things like that. I was telling Mark of a case that I was supposed to be a juror, and I went, and, I'm a lawyer, and because it's all there, I'm not hiding anything, and I had the two sharks, one beside each other, and then the judge in the middle, and he looked at me, he said, would you be prejudiced? I said, yes. They dismiss it right away, so they don't want bullshit. They just go straight to the point. And that's what you're going to have to do. Show that there was bad faith, or there is bad faith. Everything can be resolved in good faith. You have the good faith, they have the bad one, because they're after money. They don't care.
That's really the judgment itself, is just who's in good faith and who's more in honor.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
Right. Well, I don't want to hold him up too much more.
I have two kids with me.
Oh, okay.
My girl.
All right. Well,
and I think that Brethren is going to kill me.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for your time and allowing me to ask questions, man. It's been great.
Hey, I just talked to him on the way out. I wish he had said this right when he was leaving. I walked outside with him. And he said the guy has it, and the Bai Yogi even has it better, but he's with a little too much emotion.
Who?
He said, he's talking about Yogi. He said, what's his name, Zip? Or no, because the other guy, he's English. He said, Yogi, he's got it, he's onto it, but he's coming in with, he said, that's why he said, watch his words. He says, it's not about emotion. Don't accuse anybody, don't do anything at all. Just watch your words. And he was clueing, he kind of winked at
that. Oh, no. Yeah, it's cool. We got it. That's the best. This is beautiful. This is a moment. What he said on the way out,
he kind of was like pointing that, like, you've got it. Just watch your words. Don't accuse. Don't come in with emotion. Don't do anything. It's kind of along the lines of whatever he's doing here. It's not a story. It's just simple. To the point. You already got that. That 12 USC 95A, he agreed with that. There's nothing really to talk about with that. And then it's going to fluster. They're not going to know how to handle it. But once again, everything's presented not in a way that's – it's through an accusation. There's no accusal. Just like what you're saying, get away from the fraud, get away from all that, because you're coming in constantly in good faith and honor. So that's what I took from what he said just a minute ago, because he said, yeah, Yogi.
I heard that part.
He's really onto it, and he said, just watch the words.
I thought he was going to bounce when George started talking to him. I thought he was going to bounce. I just felt it. I was like, what are you doing?
No, it was cool. It was cool. It brought up more thought. That's fine. There's nothing problem because Boris hinged off it, so don't worry about it.
Mm.
Yeah, that's interesting. It had nothing to do with nothing. It went just like it was supposed to. Interesting. Wow.
Yeah, you know, I'm really stoked that we weren't putting too much pressure on him to talk about certain things. But every time, because if you could have seen the gestures on his face, he was kind of laughing because he got it right. And meaning that he can't talk about that in or out, really. So, you know, it's like kind of what I was saying yesterday. He's cluing at stuff. He knows you've got it right. And he told me, he's basically said that. Just watch how you present it.
Yeah, well, the thing was, I was like, man, I wanted to ask a little bit about what you should do in that case with that lady from yesterday about
how to do. We already know what we're going to do. It's the same way you're going to operate everything else, dude. What we discussed tonight is everything operates the same exact way as what we discussed tonight.
Yeah, and that guy's pretty heavy in D.C.
Yeah.
I mean, he's definitely criminal. He's done all kinds of nuts. He's been known. The fact that he came in, he already knew what he was going to get asked. You know,
yeah.
He came in, he already knew. He's warmed up. He knew about 12 UC 95 from yesterday. So, hey, can you do me a favor and keep this a little bit sort of a private thing? Because, you know, I didn't tell him we were recording and stuff. And I was like, I told him about a group that I, you know, we've been working with and stuff. Like when I said that, because he asked about it. And so I just went over and the door was open. So I just walked right in. I was like, yo, man, you remember I was telling you that there's a group that I've been talking with, man, and I was just telling them about some of the stuff I talked with you yesterday. Man, would you mind coming over and just talking? There's like specifically one guy I want you to talk to. And he was like, sure. But he doesn't care right now. He retires next year. He's done. And he's moving back. He's moving down to Mex or something because he's from Cuba. But he can practice law in Cuba and in United States courts, meaning D.C. So what he saw also right away when he understood that you weren't trying to bust the illusion, not only that, trying to do something bad with this. It was something that you've been working on for a while for a good reason, you know, and it's good faith, so to speak.
Some of the guys here get on me when I start getting – I get on to them harsh when they start going on the fraud and everything else. I have to question them every single time. And every single time we get in huge arguments, and I go, dude, you're coming in here in good – you're coming in here this way, but then you're talking this way. It makes it sound like you're coming in to destroy it.
That's the double-minded.
I go, you got to get rid of that. I mean, you can't think – you got to stop thinking in that fraud. You know, they didn't do anything to fraud anybody. It's a necessity that's created to protect the illusion.
Now we have the same guys that we were talking to last time. And
no, man, I just wanted to run something by you. On the heels of the last talk, when we made mention that there was no gold, silver, and title, that basically means everything's operating in bankruptcy, right? So if it's operating in bankruptcy, any offer in bankruptcy would be a gift, correct? An offer. Someone extends you an offer and they're operating in bankruptcy, they can't have a claim because that means they're not operating in bankruptcy because they would have an account of value coming in through an account receivable. Okay, if someone makes you an offer in bankruptcy, since wouldn't that be akin to saying they're making a gift to you? Since they had a claim in bankruptcy, they wouldn't be in bankruptcy anymore, right?
Okay, let me see if I get the idea, because again, you come in and go in. But if someone makes an offer, I said bankruptcy. I'm a little bit at a loss of that. If someone makes you an offer, then you said something gift, and then bankruptcy.
Right. And okay, if someone is bankrupt.
If someone is bankrupt, okay. They file for bankruptcy, and the court said, okay, they accepted, there's no claim.
Okay, you just said there's no, okay. Can they have any claims that they don't reveal?
No, when you file for bankruptcy, or anyone who files for bankruptcy, they have to list all the assets they have, all the whatever they owe, the money they owe to whom, and so on and so forth.
Okay.
Normally, people try to get rid of as much as they can
okay.
in a bankruptcy.
All right. Now, since we have a claimant coming in, operating in bankruptcy, making a claim against someone, would they be in dishonor of the bankruptcy? Well, hold on. If everything is operating in bankruptcy, there's really no gold, no silver, no title, so there's no way to complete contracts, so it's all in operating in bankruptcy. So wouldn't the one making the offer be making an offer in bankruptcy, rendering it a gift to the one making the offer? So if someone came to you in a court case and said, I charge you with X, whatever the hell it is, and you accept it for whatever value it holds, entering and then to purchase or whatever, to complete the deal, you enter a plea of guilty to the facts, but assign all the reversionary interest to and for the account of the United States. Wouldn't you be able to do that? Because at that point, since they're bankrupt, they can't make a claim, correct?
Exactly. If someone files for bankruptcy, they cannot make a claim because they declare they don't have any money, anything. So they cannot go after anyone else who claim anything else.
All right. So if the United States and all these corporations operate in bankruptcy, wouldn't the fact they're making claims in court be a dishonor of their own bankruptcy?
It will be a dishonor. Not only it will be a dishonor, it will be unethical. It will be quote-unquote illegal because there's no merits to what they're claiming.
Okay. So if we went
so
to court.
So what?
All right, hold on. Mm-hmm. If someone were to go into court and the judge says, I'm offering you X, whatever the offer is, and the guy who's in the courtroom goes, okay, I accept your offer in bankruptcy and hereby enter a plea of guilty to the facts and assign all the reversionary interest of the case to and for the account of the United States for quittance and discharge of any further obligation, and then appoint the judge as the trustee to handle both the delivery and carry out the instructions.
Well, if you file for bankruptcy in any court in the United States, and not it's not the Supreme Court or the Circuit Court or District Court, it's a specific court that deals with that. Hold on. And do you have a hearing date and everything? And then, of course, you have a lawyer. If the lawyer goes with you or not, the creditors should show up. If they don't show up, then the party hearing the case, which is an individual appointed by the court or by the judge, in lieu of a judge, he makes a decision.
Okay.
If there's a creditor showing up, then one creditor, two, how many they are involved,
then
that would be disputed, and then the person appointed to listen to the case, the bankruptcy case, will make a decision. If the party involved file for bankruptcy or any other parties involved have their obligation to pay the creditors or not.
All right, I get all that. All right, now, since the United States or one of its state subsidiaries or a corporation incorporated thereof, would they also be bankrupt since the United States is bankrupt?
Well, how are you going to prove the United States is bankrupt? We know.
Where's
gold, silver, and title? We know. We're in a hole. We're borrowing money from China. I know that.
Again, where's gold, silver, and title gone?
But how are you going to prove that the United States as a country, as a government, is bankrupt? How are you going to come up with that? Do you have the means to prove that?
What about the Act of 1933?
No. We're talking of the present time.
Okay. Where is the gold, silver, and title so any contract can be completed?
Has anything changed?
Right.
The what?
Has anything really changed since 1933?
It hasn't changed. It hasn't changed.
Correct. So therefore, the bankruptcy is still in effect, correct?
The bankruptcy is still in effect, correct.
All right. So what's the problem? We're back to the United States being bankrupt.
How can they make a claim?
How can they have claims in court?
Because they have what is called reserve funds for emergency situations.
Okay.
Okay. So although if it still stands in 1933, the country or the United States government or the country itself, it's in bankrupt, they have reserved to make claims against others.
All right.
And that's the right that the government has to do that.
Okay. 12 U.S.C. 95A is the codification according to the statutes and codes of the National Bankruptcy Act, or at least part of it. Part 2 says any person who surrender, who assigns or delivers any part of any property is going to be acquitted in discharge of further obligation. So what does this stop me of someone coming into that courtroom operating in bankruptcy when they make a claim to say that I, as they're operating in bankruptcy and they're acknowledging it, just going, hey, all right, I accept your offer in bankruptcy, and hereby, and the name, or that name, I that person enters a plea of guilty to the facts and assigns any and all reversionary interest back to the United States for full acquittance and discharge of any further obligation and appoints the judge, the trustee, to do it. Wouldn't he be at that point a trustee in bankruptcy to receive a gift from someone else?
Yes, he will become a trustee and to receive a gift from someone else.
There you go.
And don't they say that it's for our benefit in the court?
Is it what?
We're always told it's always for our benefit. So if it's correct. Always from, if it's always for my benefit, do I have the right to assign any beneficial interest anywhere I want?
Yes, you do.
Really? There we go. Then I believe we've already found the way out.
Yes. Yes, okay. You do.
Okay.
Like that's the right. That's the right that you have.
What's that?
Sorry, that is the right that you have.
That's right.
Everybody crack open their beers now.
Okay. So have a party, drink champagne.
The chief executive officer is the bankruptcy trustee. The chief correct. Financial officer is another bankruptcy trustee. The guy who's head of the treasury is also another bankruptcy trustee. And if nothing's changed since 1931, apparently over here in England, right, the mediation process that could happen as a result of communication to any one of the three mentioned, chief executive officer, chief financial, or the head of the treasury, without it actually going into court, we can technically communicate this message to any one of those three individuals.
The question, can you narrow the question a little bit more? You just gave me the whole scenario, but can you narrow what is the question? Can he do what?
Can anyone communicating with under the so-called bankruptcy 1931, because it happened a couple of years before here, did stateside. Now, I've been communicating with various chief executives, right, along these lines. I haven't yet mentioned the bankruptcy of 1931 or the Insolvency Act, right? So if one assigns any interest or benefit to the local council in the same way as what Boris just mentioned, you know, any benefit...
We've lost him.
Because did you hear about what he said? It's unethical.
I think he just realized what he just did.
Oh my God! I hope somebody was recording all this.
Oh, got it.
Okay.
By the way, keep this recording out.
Yes.
Oh, nobody gets this one.
I'd like to congratulate everybody on this call for this. Listen, we've split the curtain of the temple wide open. What did Jesus do when we got sacrificed? The curtain was split. Now we can see behind the curtain, guys.
Do you want me to call Frank back and see if he can jump back on or something? Or he's still an attorney.
Yeah, it's basically, he told us we figured it out. He didn't tell us nothing.
Nope.
All right, I just added him back again.
Okay.
I'm calling him back. Take it easy this time. And be direct. It could be.
All right. I don't think we're going to be able to talk to him.
Yeah, that's all right.
Been forwarded to an automatic. Just, you guys want to thank him? Let's do that. And then we'll
Frank Morales
is not available. At the tone, please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Hey, Frank, just wanted to thank you for the call. I think we got disconnected. We were just having a little bit of a chat there, and you're always welcome to jump on these calls. And I left you my number if you'd like to get in touch with us, but just really wanted to thank you for jumping on the call from all of us. So talk to you soon, brother. All right, bye-bye.